Hello, friends. Welcome. As always, so happy that you're here. I am chatting today with Jasmine Holmes. Jasmine has been a guest on the show before, and you loved hearing from her. I know so many of you followed her on Instagram, and now is your chance to read one of her brand new books, Crowned with Glory. And we are going to talk all about this new book about Black history and all about the state of history education in the United States. I think you're going to love this conversation. So let's dive in. I'm Sharon McMahon, and here's where it gets interesting. I am very excited to welcome Jasmine Holmes back to the show. Yay. Thank you for coming back. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you for having me again. I was so excited.
It's fun to see you again. First of all, congratulations on your new book. I absolutely love your work so much. Your new book is called Crowned with Glory. And the subtitle is How Proclaiming the Truth of Black Dignity Has Shaped American History. And I just love it. I love it so much. Well, so congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Tell us what this book is about for somebody who has not yet read your work, who is not currently following you on Instagram, who doesn't know about the incredible content you produce. What is Crowned with Glory about?
It is all about Black abolitionists who fought for the dignity of their fellow man based on the Christian principle called the Imago Dei, or the image of God. The fact that because people are created in God's image, they have inherent dignity and they have inherent worth and they have inherent rights. It sounds really similar to some of our founding documents, and these abolitionists were holding people accountable to the promises that they had made.
I love the way that you phrase that, like the promises they had made, because in our founding documents, of course, are these ideas of like all men are created equal, but then that didn't actually come to fruition in public life. There was a huge disconnect between what people were saying and what people were doing. And so tell us more about the Black abolitionist movement and the people that you are writing about. I think we tend to think about abolitionists being some Quaker ladies in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And, you know, yes, they were involved. We tend to think of it being the Underground Railroad, but the movement was much bigger than just like a couple of famous people in the sidebars of our normal history books. So give us an overview. Condense it. Condense it all, Jasmine, into a very short, like neat and tidy. Smush it down. For people who are new to learning about this, help us understand the scope of exactly what kind of activities people were involved in here.
So the movement is unwieldy, and there's all these different tentacles coming off of it. You have everybody from William Lloyd Garrison, who founded the newspaper The Liberator, and all the way to these other folks who founded the African American Colonization Society. So you have people way on this side who are like, we should free everybody immediately. And Black people should have citizenship rights in this country, and they should be equal to us. And then you have people on the other side of the abolitionist movement who are like, slavery is bad, but when we free the Black people, we should ship them off somewhere else because this country is fundamentally made for white people and their freedom. And so you have this really big spectrum. And so in this book, the people that I focus on across that spectrum are Black. They are people who believe that Black folks should have equal citizenship in America. They are people whose belief is solidified by their belief in God and what God says about people and their dignity. And they are people who either are abolitionists in the North or enslaved people in the South who are resisting in whatever ways that they can. And so I like to describe it as kind of like a survey. Like, it's the kind of book where if you read it, you would get an overview. It's not a doorstop, but it's going to give you a nice overview of Black abolitionist thinking, Black abolitionist movement. And so it moves kind of through. It starts with Nat Turner and it ends with William Monroe Trotter. And so you have Nat Turner's rebellion in 1830, and you have William Monroe Trotter and his Black rights newspaper in the 1920s. And so it crosses that entire spectrum.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
In the words of Dwight Schrute, identity theft is not a joke, Jim. But seriously, have you ever had somebody try to steal your credit card number and then try to make a bunch of fraudulent charges? That has happened to me on more than one occasion. If it's happened to you, you know it's a nightmare. Having your personal information on the internet is like giving strangers the key to your front door. Not good. And Delete Me can keep that door locked and your information safe. And I recently found a solution that is a service called Delete Me. Delete Me finds and removes any personal information that you don't want online, and they make sure that it stays off. It is a subscription service that finds your personal info on the web, searches all the databases, and then helps prevent identity theft by removing that information from all of these databases. So when you sign up, you tell Delete Me exactly what information you want deleted, and then their experts take it from there. They send you a report every month of like, we found your information in the following places and we removed it. More simply, Delete Me does all the hard work of wiping you and your family's personal info off the web. So take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special discount just for our listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/Sharon and use promo code Sharon at checkout. The only way to get the 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/Sharon and use code Sharon at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/Sharon, promo code Sharon. The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all have stress in our life. Absolutely. It's unavoidable. It's just part of the human experience. But some of us have more than others, and some of us handle it better than others. Some of us really keep it bottled up, and it can start to affect us negatively. I would imagine at some point in your life, you can relate to this, right? And therapy is a safe space to be able to get some of these things off your chest. And that is why so many people find benefit in speaking to a qualified professional. If you're thinking about starting therapy for something like managing your stress, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Sharon today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Sharon.
It's like a highlight reel.
Why is it important for Americans in general to learn about this topic? Because I know that we share this common belief that Black history is American history, and that Black history is not just for Black people to learn about. Because it is American history, it is for all of us to learn about. Can you help us understand a little bit better? Why is it important for the average American to know about abolitionists throughout U.S. history?
Well, there's so much discourse right now about American history and what should be taught and what shouldn't be taught. What will make people feel bad, what will make people feel empowered. And so much of that is based on the ethnicity of the people being discussed. We can't make white students feel bad when we talk about slavery because XYZ. I remember when I was in college, one of my professors, he had the autobiography of Malcolm X on his shelf. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. I just read that book. And he goes, yeah, we used to study it in my freshman class, but we had to take it off the shelf because it made the white students really uncomfortable. And like, I get it. There's parts of the autobiography of Malcolm X that are really uncomfortable. I mean, Blue-Eyed Devil is not something that anybody wants to be called. But of course, the book has an arc. That's not where he ends, right? So I'm sitting there and I was like, that's really interesting, because I remember when I was in elementary school and we would read sections of like Huckleberry Finn or sections of Tom Sawyer or fill in the blank. And there would be all kinds of conversation about the inferiority of Black folks. You know, you're in elementary school, so we're not even dealing with the N-word in all of this literature. We're just dealing with the social themes. And I was like, nobody ever stopped and asked me if I was comfortable or if I was okay. It was like, that's history. That's just, we're just learning it. And so I think the first thing that I would say is that we have to be made of a little bit stronger stuff if we're going to learn American history. But then the second thing that I would say is that it's really important not to see American heritage as just falling across these color lines. So much of what we say and believe about America, that it is a land of opportunity, that it is a land of equality, that it is a land of equity, has not been true for so many people. And we really learn about the metal of our nation when we focus on these marginalized groups and how they overcame these inequalities. It shows us a lot about America. I think too often when we think about America, we think about white, middle class, upwardly mobile. We don't think about the people who resisted from marginalized places. But that's American history too. And that says a lot about the character of our nation.
You're absolutely right. Because of course, the so-called victors of history are the people who get to be featured in all of the like, wow, he financed the Titanic, you know, like, and yes, those are interesting stories. Of course they are. Nobody is saying don't learn about those things. Nobody is saying don't learn about Andrew Carnegie and the Carnegie Libraries. And nobody's saying don't do that. But I love your perspective that there is a deeper, richer story for all of us to learn about and uncover. It is to all of our benefit to know the true depth and breadth of history, not just these sort of narrow swaths of like, oh, he did this cool thing and he was super rich and she flew an airplane. You know, like there's so much more to it. And we are missing the richness of history if we are only focusing on the achievements of people who are wealthy and prominent and largely Caucasian.
Absolutely.
Tell me how you went about conceptualizing this book and how you chose who to include. Because you're right that this book could have been a doorstop. It could have been 900 pages. There's a lot of information to include. How did you choose who to include in this book?
I've always loved stories. I've always loved storytelling. And so even approaching history, one of the reasons why it's so captivating to me is because it's just a bunch of stories of people. And so part of my interest is always unearthing the stories that we've heard a little bit less about. And so this book is a book of comparisons, contrasts, and groupings. And what I mean by that is every chapter has a theme. And so instead of just being centered around one person, it's centered around a theme. So we have a chapter that the theme is Black pastors in resistance. And so that way I can talk about all of these different Black pastors and all of these different denominations who were using their pulpits as platforms of resistance. And then I have another chapter that's about Black women and their resistance. And so I can talk about all kinds of Black women alive during this period who resisted. Another cool thing was the connection between the civil rights movement that we know about, that we talk about. So I would start with something like, hey, I really want to talk about Rosa Parks, and I want to talk about Claudette Colvin and the Montgomery bus boycott. Okay, but what were the roots of that? Like, where did we see that before in the 1800s? And we see that Black women have been refusing to give up their seats on public transportation for a really long time. Ida B. Wells refused to give up her seat on a train. Harriet Tubman refused to give up her seat. Frances Ellen Watkins Harper refused to give up her seat. And so it's just kind of connecting the stories of the past to the more quote unquote modern civil rights stories that we know was one of my biggest priorities. And then again, unearthing stories that maybe we haven't heard as much about. It was also cool because in my last book, Carved in Ebony, it was a book about women. And so this book was like, oh, I can talk about the guys a little bit. We can broaden our perspective and get into a lot more things. One of my favorite things was talking about Birth of a Nation, which I watched
No.
In preparation. I did.
No.
I did.
You subjected yourself to that?
I did. I did.
I don't recommend it. I don't
recommend it. But I was very into William Munro Trotter. They called them race man, race men, race women, which is basically somebody who was really interested in civil rights and activism. And so I was like, well, I want to watch Birth of a Nation and I want to find out more about it. And found out that when Birth of a Nation came out in the 19-teens, there was all kinds of outrage. There were boycotts. There were people who were outspoken. And I'm like, I never learned that. I always just learned Birth of a Nation came out and everybody loved it.
Mm-hmm. It was at the White House.
Right. Yeah. And then all of a sudden we changed our minds and we got woke and we started. It's like, wait, no. From the beginning, people were speaking out. From the beginning, people were advocating for themselves. And I love that. And so the stories of advocacy that have been glossed over, the personal stories that have been glossed over, those are the ones that I was after.
If somebody is not familiar with Birth of a Nation, tell them what it is.
Oh, yeah. So it's based on a novel called The Klansman. It's actually a trilogy and is written by a Southern pastor. And the point of it was to kind of paint Reconstruction, the period after the Civil War, as this terrible period where white Southerners were being subjected to Black and Northern rule. And so one of the famous scenes in Birth of a Nation is this scene on the Senate floor. During Reconstruction, there were over 1,500 Black office holders. There were Black representatives. There were Black men in the Senate. Like, and in Birth of a Nation, they have a scene where these Black office holders are eating fried chicken, clipping their toenails.
Oh my, nope.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Oh,
no.
Yeah. Oh,
clipping their toenails?
Oh, yeah.
No.
It's like, it's intense. And just this menstrual ridiculousness. But at the time, it's this epic 3-hour film. Griffith.
Big budget. I
mean, oh my goodness. It was, for the time, it was breathtaking. Like the work that was put into it and the artistry that was put into it. And so it comes onto the scene and it's this runaway success, but it also accomplishes this goal of painting Reconstruction as a terrible time for white Southerners, painting the Black people in the movie as having been better off in slavery. It was a huge cultural moment.
Mm-hmm. You know, if you think about movies today that have influenced American culture, movies like Star Wars, Indiana Jones, Titanic, things that have had ongoing significant cultural influence, Birth of a Nation was that.
Absolutely.
Like Woodrow Wilson watched it in the White House. Even if he didn't come right out and say, you know, oh, I absolutely loved this movie, two thumbs up from me. The implication is that I went out of my way to make sure that I could screen this here and then to let everybody know that it had been screened at the White House. The fact that it had been screened at the White House lent it additional credibility.
Absolutely.
Made it seem like, wow. I mean, like if it's the president wanted to watch it.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, Woodrow Wilson was a historian. So
yes, yes.
It's like, I mean, if he thinks it's good.
Check it. We should check it out. We should check it out. But I love that you uncovered this idea that it was not universally praised. It was not universally like two thumbs up. In fact, there were people who organized boycotts of theaters and boycotts of events where it was being shown. It was not, it did not go without resistance.
Absolutely.
And so often that resistance is what is glossed over and forgotten about.
Yeah. And that's one of the major themes of the book is finding those pockets and those moments of resistance, interrogating our perception of American history. I remember one time I was teaching a high school class about slavery and they were saying things like, well, but like nobody knew it was wrong. Like everybody thought it was okay. And everybody thought it was right. And it's like, you know, interrogating that assumption of like, well, actually, there have always been people who were speaking up. There have always been people who were advocating for what was right. And I think that it's really, really important to point out those people as we learn history, to point them out along the way. Or our students and we get the perception that the story of America is just this one-sided story of victors who will step on anybody's neck in order to be successful. And it's okay because everybody else is doing it. That's not true. There have always been people who are saying, hey, we should do this differently. This is how we should approach human rights. This is how we should approach equality. This is how we should approach equity. And those voices don't make the American story a neat and tidy story. It makes it a lot more complex. But I think that we do ourselves a disservice when we discount that complexity.
If there is a product that I always make sure to reorder when I am running low on, it is Lumi Whole Body Deodorant. Unlike other deodorant, Lumi is powered by mandelic acid to deliver literally outrageous 72-hour odor control everywhere, from your armpits to your feet. And let me tell you, especially heading into summer, when we are all going without socks more and more and more, and you end up with that like pile of stinky shoes by the back door, everybody comes in and kicks them off. That's not the vibe. That's not the move. I don't want to smell that when I walk in the door. Do you have any like preteen or teenage people that live with you like I do? Lumi solves this problem. It comes in a tube. This is my favorite way to use it, is in a tube. And you squeeze them out just like you would a lotion. And then you can just put it in the places where it's needed. It was originally created by an OBGYN. And now her game-changing whole body deodorant has earned over 300,000 five-star reviews from people like me who love feeling confident from head to toe. It is seriously safe to use anywhere on your body. It is baking soda free. It does not irritate your skin. It is paraben free. It is pH balanced so that it is safe to use in all the places. And it comes in a variety of scents like clean tangerine, lavender sage, toasted coconut. And the starter pack is perfect for new customers. It comes with a solid stick deodorant, a cream tube deodorant, that is my favorite, and two free products of your choice, like a mini body wash or deodorant wipes, and free shipping. And as a special offer for listeners, new customers get 15% off all Lumi products with our exclusive code. And if you combine the 15% off with the already discounted starter pack, that equals over 40% off their starter pack. So use code SHARON for 15% off your first purchase at LumiDeodorant.com. That's code SHARON at LumiDeodorant.com. LumiDeodorant.com. We hear from a lot of interesting people on this podcast, and I know that I am always hungry for more. And what if you could learn from the world's best all in one place? Guess what? You can. With Masterclass, you can learn from the best to become your best. Masterclass is the only streaming platform where you can learn and grow with over 200 of the world's best instructors. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to every instructor. And you can access Masterclass on your phone, your computer, your smart TV, even in audio mode. You can listen to it like a podcast. I know that when I watch Doris Kearns Goodwin, that first of all, I'm going to be getting fantastic information, that the production level is going to be incredible. And then I'm going to walk away feeling smarter and more informed than I was before. Right now, our listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/Sharon. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/Sharon. Masterclass.com/Sharon. I've been doing my own nails at home for actual years now because of Olive & June. Before I found Olive & June, I did not do them at home, and I'm never going back to getting them done in the salon again. Olive & June has everything you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box, plus the resources to learn how to do it well. Their Poppy tool makes such a difference in being able to paint your dominant hand with your non-dominant hand. You can customize this mani system with your choice of six polishes, and the polish doesn't chip and lasts for 7 days or more. It ends up being like $2 a manicure, and you can do it while you're sitting at home watching Netflix or waiting for the cookies in the oven. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to make an appointment and go sit somewhere to get it done. Once you learn how to do it and once you practice, it is so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home.
They also have a quick dry formula now that dries in about a minute. I especially use it right before I go on a trip somewhere where I want to get them done right before I leave. And I want them to look good while I am on my vacation or at my speaking engagement. You can visit oliveandjune.com/Sharon for 20% off your first Manny system. That's oliveandjune.com/Sharon for 20% off your first Manny system.
There's such a resistance right now to talk about race in schools, such a resistance to talk about the complexities and difficulties of history. There's this strangely pervasive notion, especially amongst some in some states, that history exists for our comfort, that history is a subject that is supposed to feel like drinking a cup of hot chocolate on a snowy Christmas Eve, that's its purpose. And if we deviate from the purpose of, you know, the stated purpose of feeling good about our heroes, then somehow it's absolutely not worth learning about. And we've perverted the meaning of history if it is something other than deifying the greats of history. And I know that we both strongly disagree with that characterization of what the purpose of history is, but nevertheless, you know exactly what I'm saying.
Oh,
you're very familiar with this movement to make history a feel-good topic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you think about other times in history, like think about World War II and what was happening in Europe, what was happening to Jews in Europe, Americans have a strong desire to study the heroes of World War II, the people who resisted the Nazis. We have made zillions of movies about that. We have written tens of thousands of books about that. And well, we should talk about the people who resisted the Nazis, about the people who hid Jews in their floors and in their back rooms and smuggled them out in car trunks and made fake papers. And the resistance to the Nazis is a topic that Americans wholeheartedly embrace. Right? Like, we love it. We love to study it. We do not extend that same concept of studying resistance to the enslavement of Africans in the United States. That's woke.
Mm-hmm. That's woke.
We're not allowed to talk about that. We can talk about resistance to the Nazis, but we're not allowed to talk about resistance to enslavement because that would make people uncomfortable. Do you have any thoughts on that? Why is it okay to study resistance to evil in one context, but not in another?
It says a lot about who we think of as Americans. It says a lot about who we think of as, and when I say we, I mean, you know, the powers that be, the people that are heading this conversation about wokeness and CRT and all the above. It says a lot about whose legacy we want to protect and who we see as being part of the American legacy. And so if Thomas Jefferson is worthy of protection and part of the American legacy, and I'm going to be controversial, Nat Turner is not, why is that? I think that it's really important to even be willing to ask that question. Is resistance only acceptable when it benefits people who look like us? Is resistance only acceptable when it benefits people in seats of power? Is resistance only acceptable when it benefits the wealthy, landowning, white elite who founded America? Those are really important questions that I think it's really scary to ask. And it gets really complex. When I told my editor that I was opening up the book with Nat Turner, she was like, oh, okay. So he's like a good guy, or he's, and I'm like, you know what? He is a complicated guy. And I think that that's what I want the tone to be. This is the tone that I'm setting. This man who resisted slavery in ways that were both heroic and gruesome. This man who resisted slavery in ways that I can celebrate and also ways that I'm like, oof, Nat, too far, man. I'm not comfortable with that. Because I think that it's really important to be able to interrogate our heroes. And I think that when it comes to history and when it comes to the majority in our country learning history, we are so used to making allowances for certain people. We are so used to being like, Thomas Jefferson's the best. yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, slavery's not great. And yeah, yeah, yeah. Sally Hemings, questionable. But when it comes to minorities who have the same level of complexity, it's like, oh, it's just better just to not talk about them because we're not able to handle the complexity of this discussion. And again, I think that that says a lot about who we look at as a picture of what it means to be American.
That's such a great point, that we are willing to tolerate the complexity of some of the giants of American history, like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, James Madison. We're willing to tolerate the complexity of, like, he wrote this enduring constitution. We're willing to tolerate the fact that he enslaved people and that his wife continued to enslave people even after his death. We're willing to tolerate that. Not, we don't necessarily approve. We might be like, yeah, that wasn't right. But he did these other things that we do approve of and we do appreciate. We're willing to tolerate that complexity amongst some Americans. But when it comes to people like Nat Turner, the complexity cancels out his contribution far too often. If they do not have a perfect story, if they are not upright and righteous every moment of every waking day, they can't be a hero because we feel uncomfortable with some of the actions of Nat Turner, but we are willing to tolerate the discomfort when it comes to other people.
And it's one of the reasons why I think it's chapter 7 in the book. It's called Fratter Feeling. And it's about how even amongst these Black abolitionists, there was some disagreement. Like, so many Black male abolitionists had very traditional, quote unquote, ideas about women and their places in the home and their places in the movement, to the extent where some of the women of the movement were like, this is insanely problematic and I need y'all to, like, tighten up. Henry Highland Garnett wrote a scathing letter to Frederick Douglass and was like, I don't know why he doesn't like me that much. Maybe it's the green-eyed monster of jealousy. Like, there's all of this, I don't want to say infighting, but there's disagreement that goes on, right? There's complexity. There's difference. Even like after slavery, you know, William Monroe Trotter stood up in the middle of a speech that Booker T. Washington was giving and was like, I don't like it. I don't like it. And
not approved by me. Not approved.
I just want everybody to know right now that I'm heckling this. And that's all an important part of the story as well. It's not this pristine, like, we're all on the same page and we're all singing Kumbaya and we're all just, no, it's this hard fought resistance to oppression that comes in a bunch of different stripes, to put it in language that a lot of us are more familiar with. MLK, Malcolm X, we think about those as like two opposing figures instead of two sides of maybe the same coin in more ways than not. There's so much overlap in those two towards the end of both of their lives, but there's also a lot of difference, and we should be able to hold the complexity of those differences. And I remember the last time we talked, even like holding the complexity of MLK as like, yeah, he did some really amazing things. And yeah, also, ew.
Don't approve of the cheating.
Right.
Definitely approve of the March on Washington. Why can't we say that? Why is it that he is either a cheater or he is, you know, 100% perfect all the time?
Yes.
Why can't he be both? We make that allowance for literally everybody else.
We do. I've seen it happen. And we should be willing and able to have those discussions and hold our heroes with a more open hand.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
I just want to hear very quickly, what kind of research process do you use to write books like this? Because we all know that there has been a systematic exclusion of people of color from history. For other obvious reasons, it was difficult to record the history of African Americans because many of them could not read and it was illegal to teach them how to read. So there has been both a systematic and an accidental like exclusion from the stories. How does one go about researching these things given the lack of source material in some cases?
It always starts with a question for me. Well, read a story that on its face looks like it has very little to do with Black folks and their perspectives. And then I say, I wonder where they are. I wonder what they were doing. And so much of my work I owe to other Black women historians who have already done the work. Martha S. Jones is one of them. Stephanie Camp is another. But I prioritize the work of Black female historians because I love to follow people who have already done the work. And then I read their work and then I read their footnotes and then I go find where they took their footnotes from. And then I read that work and then I look at those footnotes. A lot of it is just searching online for primary sources. I use DocSouth so much. It's Documenting the American South and I use them all the time. They have like an entire repository of slave narratives that I spent so much time in. I also just read a lot of biographies. There's a William Monroe Trotter biography by Carrie K. Greenidge, which is outstanding. And she also just released a biography about the Grimkes. So I'm just always reading books, reading footnotes, and just like on the wild goose chases. There's an episode of Ted Lasso where Trent Krim like realizes what his book is going to be about, like how he's going to write about Ted and his team. And he comes into the locker room and he has this like wild-eyed, like, oh my gosh, I've got it look on his face. And we're watching it together. And my husband looked at me and he was like, it's you.
That's you. You're Trent Krim.
He's like, you are Trent Krim. That is you all the day. She's like, oh, I've got it. Like, and that's constantly me of like trying to make connections. That gif of that guy who has the board with all the stuff on it. And he's like turned around looking mad-eyed at everybody. That is me all day. As far as organizing that information, girl.
It's in your brain.
It's in my brain. And that's not a good place for it to be. It should be somewhere else, but it stays in my brain.
I get it. People are always like, people ask me that all the time. How do you remember all this stuff? How do you know all this stuff? I'm like, I just store it in my brain. I don't know what to tell you. If I need to check a date, I know where to find it. But it's just like, that's my filing system. It seems like more work to transfer it out of here.
Yes. And then to organize it.
Uh-uh. That's a lot of work that I don't have time for because I'm only motivated by panic. And so yes, transferring it from here to there, there's no panic. If the assignment was transfer the information by tomorrow at 4, then I would have a reason to do it.
Get done. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm not going to just do that for fun.
One of my professors asked me for some of my research that I used to make one of my posts last week. She was like, oh my gosh, this post is great. I would love to see your research for that and use it in a paper that I'm writing. And I was like, yeah, because I have it written down outside of that post.
I absolutely do. Let me send you that file.
For sure.
Later next week.
It's going to take a week, but when I get to it, I will send it to you.
Yeah, I get it. I totally get it. Jasmine, I always love reading what you have to say. I love following you on Instagram. Tell everybody where they can find you online.
I'm on Instagram at Jasmine L. Holmes. And I tried Threads. It's the same name, but I'm going to get it. But right now it's just Instagram.
Threads has no DMs. Threads has no DMs. Did you know that?
No.
No one can DM you mean things on Threads because there's no DMs. They have to be willing to say it out loud.
Okay. You know what? I may get into Threads just because of that.
Well, I'll follow you if you're there.
I am on there, but Instagram, I post a lot of carousels.
Yes. And I love them. I love them. And I like them every time I see them. And I read them every time I see them. And I'm just grateful for your time today. I'm grateful for your work. I can't wait to see what you do next. Jasmine, come back again.
All right. Thank you so much.
You can buy Jasmine's book, Crowned with Glory, wherever you get your books. And check out bookshop.org, which allows you to support independent bookstores. Thanks for being here.
The show is hosted and executive produced by me, Sharon McMahon. Our audio producer is Jenny Snyder. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And if you could leave us a review or share this episode on social media, those things help podcasters out so much. Thanks for being here today.